Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to the Intelligent Design the Future podcast. I'm Casey Luskin with Dr. Charles Garner, professor of chemistry and biochemistry at Baylor University, and we're here in beautiful sunny Austin, Texas, talking today about a recent radio interview that Dr. Garner had with Dr. David Hillis, a professor of biology at the University of Texas, Austin. And both Dr. Garner and Dr. Hillis were experts who testified at the January Texas State Board of Education meeting about the Texas science standards and how they should treat evolution. And today, Dr. Garner, you were able to actually go on a worldwide BBC radio interview where you debated Dr. Hillis. And I'd like for you to just maybe talk to us a little bit about not just what went on in that interview, but what was the back and forth between you both, and maybe give us some reflections on the general rhetoric that goes on in this debate. First of all, what was this interview and what was it all about?
Well, the BBC had a very brief, maybe 3 or 4 minutes of airtime. Kind of a debate, I guess. They wanted to know what the flaws in evolution were, and Dr. Hillis was allowed to respond to anything I brought up as flaws in evolution. The host was actually pretty good, the radio host. I thought he was decently fair about it. I brought up two things. One was that the mechanism of evolution, the natural variation coupled to natural selection, is supposed to be able to explain the complexity of living things. And I pointed out basically that that's a good idea, but there's very little evidence to support it. And Dr. Hillis responded with the fact that bacterial cultures can be seen to evolve. And I came back and said that the changes in bacterial cultures are minimal. You can get one amino acid changes, not, and if a beneficial mutation requires, you know, more than that, you can't get more than one at a time, apparently. There's been lots of research on this that it seems to increasingly be showing the problems with, you know, mutation, at least in bacterial cultures. So the evidence that small changes can ever build up to major changes, I think, still is an article of faith.
And actually, that's something that I should have mentioned, that Dr. Hillis is an opponent of the strengths and weaknesses language and a very strong proponent of neo-Darwinian evolution. So this brings us back to the general rhetoric of this debate, Dr. Garner. You were here in January, and you heard a lot of claims that evolution is so far well established that students shouldn't be really even be given any opportunities to talk about any significant weaknesses or critiques in Texas public schools. Do you hear this kind of claim a lot, or what do you hear from the other side in terms of how Darwinism should be treated, and you know, how well documented is it?
Well, what's normally said is that evolution is a fact. And they treat it as a monolithic theory that doesn't have parts. So if, like, any one part of it is established, it's all established. And, of course, we know that microevolution is an established thing. You know, organisms can undergo small changes. Bacteria can become antibiotic resistant. Birds can change beak sizes. You know, a few things like that. But we're talking now, and the host on the BBC program wanted to know, how do you go from one type of creature to another? And that's the kind of things that, you know, microevolution is not proven to accomplish. It's thought to do that, but that's an article of faith, if you ask me. But one of the major problems with the whole debate about evolution is that it's all taken as a single block. You know, if any one part of it, let's say microevolution is proven, that means macroevolution is proven. That means random mutation natural selection is the mechanism. It means we're not allowed to question anything. Evolution, you'll hear people say things like evolution's a fact, evolution happens every day, things like that. Well, the controversial aspects of evolution are not facts, and they do not happen every day.
In your opinion, obviously, some of the more controversial claims have to do with natural selection and random mutation. Do you feel that this mechanism is as well demonstrated as other mechanisms that you perhaps have researched in your field of abiotic and organic chemistry?
Oh, absolutely not. As an organic chemist, I think in very molecular terms. You know, when I see an organism, I think actually in terms of the chemicals, maybe the DNA, changes in the DNA that drive the changes in proteins and things like that. So if you're going to convince me of something, I want to see molecular evidence for it. And in fact, you know, even though people can document mutations, they can see changes in the DNA going from one organism to another, so they can actually see similarities and differences. What's not clear at all is that random unguided events can ever convert one creature into another. You know, the fact that you see these differences doesn't mean they just happened on their own. I want to see the molecular evidence for that in particular.
So, Dr. Garner, obviously you are a Darwin skeptic in a certain sense. Have you always held this view? Is this something that you've come to later in your career? Or when did you come to the position that you're skeptical of neo-Darwinism? And what was the evidence that really brought you to that position?
Yeah, interestingly enough, Casey, I grew up an atheist. My family was not religious at all, and there was no reason for me to be religious. And I embraced atheism. I thought, including evolution. And, there's no reason to doubt it. Why? It was a convenient theory, It didn't have any of these religious overtones that I might not have been comfortable with. I remember as a kid, I ordered Carl Sagan's book, Intelligent Life in the Universe. And I read that, and I thought it very plausible there'd be intelligent life and how would we contact him. And, the whole view. Now, that was my worldview for years and years. In 12th grade, I became a Christian. And I began to realize there's more to this world than I realized. And ever since then, I've become skeptical of claims, especially historical claims, that don't seem to have enough evidence behind them. And so as I went through college and studied chemistry and in graduate school, I would always ask myself, what is the evidence for this theory? Now, some historical things seem to have good evidence. In college, I took a course in plate tectonics. And I find the evidence for plate tectonics pretty convincing, the different mountain ranges and this and that. So it's not like I doubt everything, especially having to do with the age of the Earth. Much of that, at least the parts of it that I see good evidence for, I have no reason to doubt. Okay, but when you say major claims, Carl Sagan said that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Now, I think he was thinking of something else when he said this, but I would apply that to evolution. Mm. If you're going to tell me that that the complexity of life just happens based on chemistry and physics and cosmic accidents, if you tell me that one life form can turn into another, I want to see the molecular evidence for that, that can happen in an unguided process. Mm. Okay.
Well, as a huge fan of plate tectonics myself, I can appreciate what you're saying. I guess maybe I would just like to ask you one final question, Dr. Garner. You've had to traverse the tricky waters of academic freedom, being a PhD university professor and being obviously both research and teaching professor. What advice would you have to, say, an undergraduate or graduate student who had skepticism of evolution or was pro-intelligent design and was trying to figure out, how should they go about pursuing their degrees when they have these views and they know what's potential? I mean, is this a real phenomenon that they should be careful, that they should be worried about what could happen to them in their careers? And if so, what should they do?
Absolutely. You do have to be careful. The movie Expelled was pretty accurate. And in fact, it turns out there are many, many examples at lower levels beyond the movie Expelled. I would say as a student going through college, you, for the most part, especially if you want to get an academic career, keep your head down. In other words, always think, about the evidence and the data, but you'll have to kind of keep your opinions to yourself beyond maybe a few very careful questions here and there. In the testimony at the school board yesterday, there was at least one person talking about her degree that was one fellow in the lab was essentially kicked out or failed to get his degree because of doubts about evolution. I've seen responses just like that. Yeah, so keep your head down until you get tenure. In fact, if I was testifying at the school board without tenure, I'd probably be in big trouble, even at my university.
Wow. Well, Dr. Garner, I appreciate your time, and we appreciate you being on our podcast.
Thank you, Casey.
This is Casey Luskin with the ID of the Future podcast. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.